Welcome one and all to the Stock Up Podcast, your one-stop shop for stocking up on the information you need to qualify for the Pro Tour. My name is Alex. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Sir Jacob Negro. How's it going, Jacob?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. We're recording in the morning, which we don't usually do, and I'm a bit of a zombie, so I've got my cold brew. I'm ready to go. I will say that I have something to brag about. I am now a Washington LGS store champion, so kind of a big deal.
What deck did you play?
I played Blue Black Control.
With the Candy Trails?
With the Candy Trails. Trails pulled me through, yeah.
You see, they made a card that's very similar to Candy Trail in the next set, but way worse.
No way. Oh, it's worse.
Well, it doesn't scry to you, and it's just indestructible. I guess it also draws a card without sacking it. It just says when it leaves, I think. So if you sack it to something else. But
okay, well, I don't think I've had someone just try to destroy my Candy Trail. Sometimes it gets hit by temporary lockdown.
Yeah.
But you get it back eventually with it again. Yeah. So
certainly the scry to you is a big sell to why you play that card anyways.
Yeah, totally. So for today's episode, we're going to be talking about Standard. We're in a bit of a lame duck format, Standard, but it's still relevant. People have their store championships, their Standard showdowns, and then also this weekend, relevantly, there's an arena qualifier.
Yeah, so it's qualifier weekend, and for those of you maybe interested in it, especially if you're just big arena players that maybe haven't qualified for it, you still have a chance on Friday to play the best of three play-in, which means you'll have to go 4-0, but just keep it in mind that you could still play best of three standard to then play on Saturday.
Yeah, I had forgot about that, to be honest. Luckily, I qualified. I actually did it. You could do it playing sealed.
Yeah, I saw that. I did it playing best of one with a deck. We'll talk more into depth later, but I played the Is It Cauldron deck in best of one. I actually started by playing Roots, and I punted to not win on the first shot, and then I did a poor shot with Roots, and then I just qualified on my first shot with Cauldron. So not that hard to get in, especially because on this first shot, I got a lot of more gems than I got. Like, I got up gems on my first shot, so.
Yeah, I don't play in these often. I think I'm going to start trying to play them going forward. The sealed one, it's funny. It's kind of like my Arena Directs where I was, like, winning 1-5. I think it took me 5 runs, but, like, every run I finished with enough wins to hit me like more gems than I started with. So,
oh, nice. Yeah.
So it took me a while to get like a really good pool that would do it, but the gems were much more generous than they are for like the directs or whatever.
Yeah, they are. I think if you get 4 wins, you basically break even. So
yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we're just going to be talking about Standard, what the top decks are right now, what we've been playing, etc., and then maybe a recommendation or two from us. The next few weeks, we're going to be discussing Edge of Attorneys and rotation and all that sort of thing. But, you know, this format is still pretty interesting. After the bans, there's a lot of room to explore, I would say, with the new cards that didn't really get to shine before.
Yeah, I agree.
So before we get started, I want to remind everyone that you can find us over at patreon.com/stockuppodcast. I want to thank everyone who's already signed up to be a patron. That's really great. We're happy to have you. If anyone else would like to sign up, it's $1 a month. You get access to our Stock Up Podcast Discord, as well as any exclusive posts from me and Jacob over on Patreon. Of course, if you don't want to pay $1 a month, it's totally fine. You can watch us on YouTube, follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. So without further ado, so Jacob, what have you been trying in Standard since the bans?
Yeah, I've been trying a lot of different things. I'll just say really quick, I've tried the Is It Cauldron deck, Blue Red Prowess, the Tifa Landfall deck, Dimir Midrange, Roots, Jeskai Control, and Naya Yuna. And I guess that's pretty much extensively what I've tried, but some a lot more than others.
Okay. I haven't tried nearly as many decks. I've played different control decks, which I actually think are pretty well positioned, and different Yuna decks, which I think are not very well positioned. And then I've tried the Cauldron deck a little bit. But I've gotten into Mythic, and I've started to play against different decks. So I've started to play against the Cauldron deck. So a lot of my experience with some of the decks have been, you know, playing against them. But I still get experience with those decks in a way, oddly enough.
Yeah, and like I said, I qualified for the qualifier weekend using Is It Cauldron. And I would say that's the most likely deck I'm going to play this weekend.
It's very strong.
Yeah, its strongest draws are completely absurd. I don't think there's probably a way you could conceive winning on turn three, but you can have very powerful turn threes where you basically can't lose, and then the rest of your deck. I would say the card quality is not amazing, but you have a lot of mini combos, is how I'd put it. You know, like it's mostly a profs deck as a backup, and then sure, if you don't do the cauldron thing or draw profs, your deck's pretty mediocre, but it's kind of hard to miss on both of those things.
Yeah, and it's so Vivi, you know, is one of the best cards from the new set. That's just sort of a nice card to play with in standard. It provides an angle that your opponent just sort of has to answer on spot. There's not really many cards like that. And then it's one of the decks left that has these, like, broken 2-mana non-creature permanents that are hard to answer, which we've learned is pretty valuable.
It's a really weird VV deck because it doesn't have all these cantrips, so its non-creature count is pretty low. But a nice part about it is that you feel a lot more comfortable maybe just jamming VV on turn three because that could just be a path to getting it in your graveyard anyways.
Yeah, that's kind of true. The couple games I played, I just jammed it. And I definitely had one game where it just lived. And even though you're not the cantrippy type deck, it's still pretty powerful.
Yeah, and then if you can combine it with profs, then it becomes really powerful again, where, you know, you just maybe have one Winter Night Stories in the profs, and then suddenly it has enough power to harmonize the Winter Night Stories without even tapping it, so you're still going to get to combat or things like that on the next turn.
Mm-hmm. And it's not super easy to hate out either. I put against Mono White, and they brought in Rest in Peace against me. And at some point, I just, like, into the Flood Maw, the Rest in Peace, so I could get a VV under a Cauldron. And that pretty much beat them, even though they, you know, they just played the Rest in Peace again the next turn.
Yeah, and then I've been, I never board out all of my Cauldrons or anything like that. But usually, like, one or two Cauldrons are some of the first cards I'll side out, because people are usually attacking the graveyard with this deck, and I kind of lean more into the prof side, and you bring in more interaction usually for the matchup too that you're in.
Makes sense. So in your mind, when you're playing on ladder, like, what are the top decks? What do you strong when you play against, etc.?
Certainly I've played against Dimir and the Cauldron deck the most, I'd say. Certainly on ladder, play against a lot of nonsense too, but I think Dimir is probably the most popular. I mean, on Goldfish, it's the most popular deck, but I expect that to still be true through this weekend. It's a really solid deck, and I think, you know, if you like playing that deck, I would not try to convince you to not play it, I guess. I have some weird things about that deck. It's definitely good, but I think it can be a little weak to some non-creature permanents if they stick, and Kaido is a really snowbally card that plays extremely well from ahead and extremely poorly from behind, so I think the games are sometimes a little, like, hit or miss for me.
Yeah, Curiosity Cat's a little bit of the same way. Doesn't have
Curiosity
as exaggerated, like, of a problem, but
a pretty good card against people trying to attack you, I guess. Like, flashing it in and blocking and trading is, like, an amazing thing that card can do, whereas Kaido is almost useless entirely on defense. I know you can stun things, but as soon as they have a second thing going on, you kind of just have a useless card in your hand.
Yeah, that deck also has the problem where sometimes if you don't draw either Kaido or Curiosity Cat, you can't win games either.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
I've had that happen.
But yeah, I think the format is pretty diverse right now, even saying that. Especially, I think, an Arena qualifier weekend, day one particularly, I would expect to play against a wide range of decks. If you make day two, that might narrow in a lot. It would not surprise me if it is way more, like, a huge difference in metagame shares on the second day. I think that's probably not atypical for these events. It's also kind of interesting in these events, if you didn't know, and maybe at any point they could change this, I guess, but you can submit a different deck on day two from day one.
Yeah. Do you have any strategies for that sort of thing in general? Or do you think that just the best deck you've decided it should be for both days?
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you're practicing a deck, I would think that's the case. I would probably, if I ever use that strategy, it would be more to leverage my play skill to some extent, where a deck like Jeskai Control might be more appealing to me on day one. And then if I made day two of Jeskai Control, I might consider one of these more proactively powerful decks, like Cauldron or Dimir, because they're just gonna kind of not care so much how good your opponent is.
So basically, if all things equal in terms of your ability to play the two decks, like if you're really comfortable with both decks, then maybe the first day you would play the... So like control decks, people, lesser skilled players are more likely to make a mistake against, basically.
Yeah, I have a weird feeling about how control decks work in Magic in general, where I'm not sure it's really a matter of you outskilling your opponent a lot of the times. Oftentimes I feel like they're more of a skill check.
Right. Like, that's how like I feel about it.
Yeah, like you have to be this experienced in the matchup to understand a lot of key things when you play against a control deck. And then once people kind of pass that bar, it doesn't really become a matter of your skill versus their skill. It's mostly you just asking, do they pass the bar?
Yeah, there's like things you can get away with that your opponents will, you know, not see, that sort of thing.
Counterspells are just a huge one, especially a card like Three Steps Ahead, which I don't even play, but tons of people play. But like sometimes these decks just pass with a counterspell and it's like, well, you're not going to do anything if I don't cast any spells on this turn. So you can both just kind of like skip your turn. And then when they're passing with Coil and Catch is when you could actually cast your spell because it's costing them something to counter your spell instead.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a simple example. And there's things that like that that come up a lot because the nature of their deck is more hidden information.
Yeah. Event will be closed deck lists. I get super annoyed by just playing on Arena and closed deck lists. I lose to really weird cards all the time, or especially the control decks.
Oh, that's the fun of it.
Players I play that have main deck Jace, I feel like must be above 90%. It makes me just want to play aggro decks always that Jace is completely unplayable against. They always just tune their decks to beat control mirrors. It's so weird to me.
It is frustrating. I think it's because it's annoying to lose control mirrors because you feel so helpless when your opponent has a card that just trumps them.
Yeah, and the match takes forever on Arena and you just want to make sure you win it.
Yeah, I kind of get the urge, although every time I put Jace in my deck, I'm like, fine, I'll put the stupid Jaces in. I draw them in a normal matchup, and I'm just like, this card is so awful. Yeah, so yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, in my mind, so I'll say what I've been playing against a lot, because right now I think there's sort of a flavor of the week that I've been picking out, especially now that I've finally gotten into Mythic. I've noticed a trend. There's people trying a lot of green decks, so I've seen lots of Llanowar Elves. Less so even than like crappy green black midrange decks. I think people have kind of put those down for now. But I've been playing against like mono green Landfall. I've been playing against these decks that are like trying to put the World Wagon and other ramp spells into play. You know, they go turn one elf, turn two, three mana ramp, and then sometimes they have green overlord or.
Yeah, have you played against like a teamer
Kona
surprise deck?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
That originated from Shahar Shenhar streaming a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
With Three Steps Ahead and everything?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's such a weird deck. Yeah.
Yeah, I had someone like ramp
He's like top 20 Mythic. I saw him playing it.
Nice. Yeah, I had someone ramp into like the dismiss mode of Three Steps Ahead against me, and I was like, what is going on?
Yeah, very weird teamer big monsters deck.
So lots of green ramp. BB Call has been good. I myself have been playing, as people will probably know from the last podcast, troll decks, a different variety, and Yuna decks. Yuna inherently is like seems very strong to me, and I like the construction of the decks, and I think it's going to have a bright future. I don't think it's particularly well positioned right now against what people have been playing.
It's a little low on interaction for things like both Landfall and Vivi, I'd say. Like, they're not... I feel like it doesn't do a very good job going over the top of those decks because those decks are just, one of them is literally attacking for 100 and the other one's attacking for like 30 a lot of the time or whatever. Like,
yeah, a lot of the decks at the moment or Cauldron are asking for you to have lots of interaction to beat them. And Yuna's just not the style of deck that can play a lot of interaction because it needs slots for so many other things.
Yeah, like I guess for example, versus both of those decks, I think Overlord of the Mistmoors is just not where you want to be at all. It's not even close. Like
exactly. Whereas like, you know, a couple weeks ago against Dimir Midrange was kind of stomping around. Mistmoors is kind of exactly where you want it to be.
Yep, I agree.
So yeah, so then I've been playing control decks, and I think control decks are pretty decently positioned right now. They have a lot of, like, they do pretty well against all the green decks.
Yeah, a lot of removal. So I played Jeskai Control at a store championship last weekend. I lost my final match for the invite, unfortunately, to, or not the invite, the promo for the Final Fantasy one. And yeah, I mean, I played a lot on ladder. I picked that deck because I knew it was one I could borrow from a friend, because I don't think many people had like the VB Cauldron deck available or anything like that to lend out, especially.
Cauldrons are like oddly really expensive, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
And this VB.
Playing a lot of format and VB. Yeah. VB's new too. And yeah. Anyways, I mean, the big appeal to that deck to me is just your another stock up deck, which I do think is one of the best cards in Standard still.
I think I'd agree with that.
The mana is close to fine. You know, it's the Surveil Verge mana base plays out kind of fine. I think it's a little better when you don't play cards like Three Steps Ahead, because, you know, the list I played, which kind of a stock list, I think I had like 15 blue sources. You know, it's not like it's hard to fit in 18 or something like that.
Yeah, just as a note with the mana bases right now, it maybe things will change once Shocklands come out, so that'll be interesting. But like, even when I was building the Unidex with Overlords and stuff, double pips are pretty hard. It's why I was playing cards like Starting Town. But of course, I don't really want Starting Town to control deck at all. That, you know, it's a pretty bad card there. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the Jeskai control deck, you know, it's only trying to have double white, and then late game having double blue is definitely useful. I mean, I guess as Meringue River Regent, literally, but also, you know, maybe playing a spell with a counter spell backup can become important.
Right, yeah. And it, you know, it, you don't get very many utility lands either, or colorless lands. You sort of have to play within the bounds of the mana that you're given.
Yep, I had just one Quarry Mountain Monastery, which I loved. It's really amazing in that deck, I think. But it's even hard to fit in a second, even though I kind of would like to. But I just don't think you can really justify that.
Mm-hmm. So how did you end up doing in that tournament?
So I got a draw in a mirror match, but I was paired down. And then I played the final match against Jeskai Control and lost the final. So I think technically I got third or fourth, actually, because someone else surpassed my record.
Sure. But you're playing for the finals, yeah.
Yeah, I was playing for the promo in the end. Had I won, I would have been first place. I had a pretty normal list, pretty similar to the ones you may have seen at the last PT. I included only two lockdowns in my main because of the bans, and to kind of adjust for that, I included a main deck and sideboard copy of Fire Magic, which I liked a lot. You know, they're still sort of a sweeper for the deck, but they're also kind of just a one mana removal spell. You know, one for winning a creature is totally fine, or, you know, if they, you can get a bat or... Yeah, Spyglass Siren is kind of fine to hit, especially if they're cracking a map on it. It was very useful against me against Convoke, even though I lost. I kind of just lost game three to them having two Protect the Negotiators to counter a Fire Magic on their turn into an Ultima on my turn. But that's how it goes.
Yeah. Can you like kill a Llanowar Elf in that deck if you want to a Fire Magic? Do you have the mana for it?
Looks like I have six... No, or yeah, actually the Verge. I guess I only have the red Verge, the red-blue Verge, so not really on the draw.
Okay.
So yeah, obviously the one mana red spells. I had a one Torch the Tower as well, and kind of to assist with that, there's two Rediscover the Ways and a Roiling Dragonstorm, and I guess Beza. But, you know, it's not always about casting these one mana spells on turn one. It's just the fact that you, on turn four, you know, you could stock up and cast one of these or things like that. You know, you can just squeeze it in on another turn.
Or fit them in with your tap lands. That's pretty important because these decks have a lot of tap lands.
Yeah, you could play a Surveil Land on turn one and a Surveil Land on turn two and still cast a spell, things like that. Because really, I think the play pattern of this deck so often is to try to make sure you interact with your opponent on some way on turn two and then try to cast Stock Up or Rediscover the Way on turn three. And I played two Rediscover the Ways in addition to four Stock Ups, which I felt really good about, just kind of making sure that you... always have one of these two for ones that works with Shiko especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. One of the reasons I've liked blue-black control, even though it's a deck that other people haven't really built, is the black removal allows you to, you know, black removal, black discard, that sort of thing, allows you to play something more cheap cards that go well with stock up. Pretty simple. I mean, the more I play Standard these days, or maybe this is just a Magic trend in general, the more I'm aching to fit cheaper cards into my deck.
Yeah, you know, I played 14 cards that cost two or less that could interact with my opponent. They don't always line up every well. You know, I was counting one Negate and three Exhales. I had two Helixes, one Dragonfire, one Obliterating Bolt, one Torch the Tower, one Fire Magic, and four Get Lost. You know, it's kind of a weird split of things, but just trying to make sure it works out. To at least have a little bit of pressure relieved going into your third turn. I think it's just such a crucial turn for the deck.
Yeah. I tried some blue-white control also, and I copied some stock lists. And blue-white control has a lot of things going for it. I think the lists are way too clunky at the moment. Like,
yeah,
people are playing like Overlord of the Mistmoors and lots of Bezas and, you know, Three Steps Ahead, just really expensive. And I'm pretty sure we could fix that about the deck. I think that's one of the decks I'm going to be working on a little bit, and maybe I'll post to the Patreon if I get it into a nice spot. But I'm pretty sure you could probably play more cheaper cards. Maybe you play some more cheap card drawing, Dreams of Laguna, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I know people made fun of this a lot. And now that Heartfire Hero is banned, things are certainly different. But Mitchell Tamlin, who top 16 the last Pro Tour with blue-white control, had the common blue-white Plains Island land, in addition to, you know, Meticulous Archive, of course, and eight planes, and played laydown arms in his deck just to have more cheap removal.
Dude, I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah, and you know, it's more like a meta thing where it's like, yeah, sure, this deck's not going to be exiling a Jolduret or maybe even a Preacher of Schism on curve with that card, but later in the game, it can, and on turns one and two, it probably has two planes a lot of the time, so you know, you're exiling these one and two drops that people are playing at that Pro Tour probably pretty reliably.
Yeah, when and Laydown Arms, I think, is rotating, so right?
It is, so that won't matter moving forward, but I respected that list a lot for that reason.
Oh, for sure. When Duskmourn first came out, this was like right before I had my resurgence in playing a lot of Magic, but I built still liked playing Standard, and I built a green white deck that was kind of like the Domain decks, except the engine was like Beanstalk, of course, but Caretaker's Talent, and I had, so it was just white green, and then I had my mana base skewed so that I could play Laydown Arms, and it was pretty nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I totally get trying to play the cheap interaction and all that.
But yeah, I think the control decks are kind of, it's fine. I mean, Jeskai Control is kind of a sorcery tap out deck that, it's weird to say it's somewhat proactive, but you know, you are just trying to set up your game to play things like Shiko. And it's not like the way people sometimes use control decks that are trying to play this ultra long game all the time.
Yeah, the Jeskai is really teetering on just being a mid-range deck.
Yeah.
It doesn't have inevitability in every matchup. So,
yeah, that's
important
to note, you know, that you play matchups sometimes where you need to be actually finding a way to pressure your opponent. That used to be true of the Omniscience matchup, which, you know, Handshake players that played Jeskai Control at the last PT main decked a Ghost Lantern and a Soul Guide, a Ghost Vacuum and a Soul Guide Lantern for that matchup, which I think makes sense because it completely swings that matchup, I'd imagine, which that might still be true in the future format if Omniscience makes a comeback with whatever, you know, maybe some new 4-mana reanimation spell gets printed, or maybe a 5-mana one is actually good enough. I know that could happen this weekend even, but that's kind of tough in the field of Cauldron being one of the top decks and Dimir. I think it's probably not very good into either of those decks.
Yeah. Having some Graveyard Hate, so in my blue-black deck, there's been a lot of incidental artifact removal that people have been playing, I've noticed. Like, there's been more Braids, and green decks have had some main deck stuff. So I've cut the, like, Hedron Archives, and I've been playing a main deck Lantern, and it's been pretty good. People might be moving away from it now, but it was nice hitting like Esper Origins type things.
I thought about one main deck Lantern in my prowess list of the last Pro Tour. It's kind of tough when the meta is so warped around prowess mirrors, so not really a thing anybody did, but you know, if you really thought, I made that decision because I was seeing Omniscience become extremely popular on Magic Online at the time, so you know, it's just like, I don't know, if you're gonna tell me that Omniscience is slowly going to creep up and be one of the most popular decks, then I think, you know, main decking a card like that, it's not something you should ignore. It's something you have
to do yourself. Yeah, in particular, a card that can just cycle if you need it to. Yeah. Obviously, there's a limit to how many cards you could put in your deck that
only cycle.
But yeah. Speaking of Omniscience, I played in a second Standard Championship, which... And this time I went to one, I guess it was a WPN premium store.
Okay.
And so people traveled from Canada to come play.
Nice.
That I hadn't seen before. And I I decided to play Naya Yuno because I had put the cards, I had been slowly accumulating the cards for it, and it just sounded fun. And like Leyline Binding is rotating, so I wanted to play with that a bit. And I won my first match, and then I stood up and saw that like this three team of grinders had all brought Blue White from Canada, all brought Blue White Omniscience. And I was like, well, I guess I'm dead. Yeah. And it was the first time in Standard in a long time where I got paired against someone the next round. And they're on Blue White Omniscience, and I thought about my deck and the matchup, and I was just like, wow, I have very little chance to win. And it was a very strange feeling, and it suddenly made me understand why they wanted to temper the Omniscience deck, if I'm being honest. All that to say, I was going to ask you, what do you think about Omniscience right now as a deck?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, needing a 5-mana card certainly is a big deal. It changes your key turn, or that deck, you know, sometimes in the face of Graveyard Hate, you'd answer their Graveyard Hate, and then you know, on turn 6, you'd play your Roiling Dragonstorm, you'd play your Boilos, and you'd win. And that's all just getting delayed another turn, which is a big deal. And then on top of that, the two most played decks in Standard right now are a Dimir mid-range deck with not the most disruption main deck, but still some, and that works, you know, like they have a mix of Duress and Spell Pierce and usually some weird Quench variant. In addition, the Tidebinder can sometimes be annoying for you as well, and this kind of flash game they play. And then Kaido is just such a house, they can just get that into play on turn 3. You're not very good at stopping them. And then the Cauldron deck just has main deck Cauldrons. In my play in qualifier, I had a draw as Cauldron that was honestly pretty crappy and would have lost a lot of matchups, but I was against Omniscience and just ended up continually sticking one Cauldron that they kept answering, but they just never got Omniscience into play against me. This was best of one. And, you know, I just kind of won with mediocre creature beats and a little bit of Graveyard Hate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. That is funny that the Cauldron would be such a problem. So that's definitely something to consider. And I have been seeing Cauldron decks, people playing them besides just VV, because it's a pretty strong card. Although I don't know that any of those decks are you're going to play against this weekend, but people were definitely trying them. So the Omniscience, you think that, like, because after I played against it and thought about it some, I was like, maybe it isn't such a big deal that the Boilos cost one more. And it's also, it's not strictly just costing one more. It's actually a little bit of a better card because your opponent can't interact with the Omniscience with creature removal.
Yeah, that's fair. But I just think, you know, this deck might have a future post-rotation, like I said, even though that would require a different spell being used to return it. Like, what the deck is doing is, you know, it's acting on an access for your opponent. Can't really use removal. They need very specific cards to beat you. It probably will still have really good game one matchups, but I really think costing an additional mana is just going to tax you too much across the board post-board, and I think the format's just a little hostile. Even if Omniscience had no bans, I think it might be a tough weekend for it.
Sure. Okay. So something to keep in mind, maybe if people stop playing a bit of Soul Cauldron. That card's definitely not rotating though, right?
No, yeah. It's the combination of it and VV. The only things rotating from that deck really are Shivan Reef and Voldaren Thrillseeker.
Gotcha.
And Thrillseeker is a card that I would say is correct to play right now in that deck. I'm playing two copies. I could see even playing one copy. But it's mostly just pretty good at being like a game-ending card, which matters in this deck weirdly because, you know, if you play against a deck like the white decks, that white control decks have Ultima or things like that, you do want to make sure you can kind of have this ability to one-shot your opponent, which you still have without Thrillseeker because you have stuff like Tirsa or just casting enough spells with VV. This deck can have truly absurd turns, I guess, if you haven't seen it in action yet. The interaction of Cauldron and VV, you know, can generate a ton of mana, and then notably, like, the fact that VV says you can only use this once per turn, that's, like, limited per each activation you have of it. So, like, I've had turns versus the mono-white deck where, you know, at the end of their turn, I'm exiling a VV to my Cauldron, and then on my turn, later in the turn, I'm exiling a second VV to my Cauldron, which means all my creatures can use a VV ability twice if they have a counter on it. Or, if I play a VV, it can use a VV ability three times. You can get absolutely ridiculous amount of mana, and then sometimes that ridiculous amount happens post-combat because of Prof's Eidetic Memory putting the counters on a creature mid-combat. You know, I've had a turn where I think I had like a 17-17 Tirsa by the time I went to combat. My opponent chumps with it, and then I make 34 mana and beat them with Thrillseeker.
Yeah, something you maybe don't realize if you haven't played against the deck yet, which, because I didn't, is that Vivi, its own ability is sort of tempered to the fact that it starts with zero power.
Yeah.
And when you're just putting a plus one counter on a random creature that already, you know, has three or four power, you get a huge burst of mana right away. I wanted to ask you before we get off the topic for this deck, because you brought up Thrill Seeker as like a game ender. Have you liked that dragon? Is it a goblin? I think it might be a goblin.
Draconautics Engineer?
Yeah, that was in the sideboard of my deck.
Sideboard, but the haste granting thing has not come up to me as being a game ender. I mean, I've used it to get an extra damage. It's mostly just like a value creature that can make a dragon that can be good under Cauldron. And yeah, it's kind of there to maybe board out your Thrill Seekers when you don't really need that game ending capability, but you still want some good hits under your Cauldron.
Yeah, I thought maybe if Thrill Seeker's gone, you could play a card like that, or I was wondering.
Yeah, you could play one Wild Ride, and that would probably work too a lot of the time. But like I said, there's probably nothing as good as Thrill Seeker at winning post-combat.
Right.
It matters a lot with the way profs work in this deck.
Right.
Because you can definitely end up with a ton of mana on your second main phase after having an amazing first main phase.
Mm-hmm. Winter Night Stories is a really strong card in this
deck. Yeah,
that's
the card that really glues the deck all together. It's just kind of perfect. It having Harmonize, you know, you get so much mana that having a flashback spell like that matters so much. You often can find these turns where you're playing it and flashing it back without even harmonizing. You just have that much mana.
It definitely, when I first saw that card, I sort of thought, you know, it's a bit of a shame because it's a cool card to be in the same set as Stock Up.
Yep.
But I think maybe, you know, it's opened my mind to it going, building decks going forward with new cards come out, that Winter Night Stories could be a good card.
Yeah, you know, the Profs and Marauding Mako thing and Delirium, you know, sometimes you go Mako into Fear Missing Out and you discard something, and then on turn three you play Winter Night Stories, and even if you didn't discard another Fear Missing Out because of the two-type thing, you know, you discarded one card with the FOMO, and then the Winter Night Stories is a sorcery itself, and if you choose to discard two cards with it instead of one creature, you could just have Delirium.
Yeah.
That's
for sure.
Not that uncommon of a sequence for the deck.
One thing I like about this deck is it's easy to see it as like kind of a combo deck, but if your opponent sort of just focuses on picking apart your like cauldrons and combo, then you can pretty easily beat them with profs. You're still a pretty good profs deck with like the haste creatures. And
yeah, you're definitely like an amazing profs deck. And then I guess another thing that I think you don't see in a lot of Cauldron decks all the time. You know, Cauldron cares about creatures having +1/+1 counters on them. And this deck, you know, has Marauding Mako, Prof's Eidetic Memory, and VV, all of which are cards that generate +1/+1 counters themselves. So that's how you get these truly absurd turns where, like, you start, you know, maybe you just have a turn two, Fear of Missing Out, discarding a VV, and then on turn three, you play your Cauldron, you put a counter on the Fear of Missing Out. You make three mana, and, you know, like, you could play another VV and a one mana spell, you removal spell on their guy, and you have a one counter VV that then maybe can make two mana and cast a Prof's Eidetic Memory and then put more counters on things, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So this is, do you think this is like the deck to beat? Is this the best deck in Standard at the moment?
I feel like it's the best deck, but I will still say I think the Mirror Midrange will be the most played deck until the format rotates.
Okay. Do you have any inclination of that matchup in particular?
How that goes? I think it's favored for the Cauldron deck. I think, you know, things like Profs and Cauldron are pretty valuable non-creature permanents that the Dimir deck doesn't interact with very well. One of the better cards from the Dimir side is Fairy Masterminds. This deck plays into it really, like, all the time.
Right.
So you give them a lot of cards that way. So you kind of want to make sure you have some removal that's cheap. You know, Torch the Tower and sideboard Fire Magic. I've even seen the occasional main deck copy of Fire Magic. Can kind of do that well. In addition to that, on a note, I guess, I see more and more Fairy Masterminds out of the sideboard of the Cauldron deck because it's pretty good in the mirrors.
Do you have your list relatively finalized?
Yeah, so I can read over just really quickly. I have it in front of me.
Yeah, perfect.
I might change some things. So when I hit the kind of, there's a pretty key flex slot in this deck I'm trying out that I might change. So for one drops, I've got four Mako, three into the Flood Maw, three Torch the Tower, just kind of a split. I've tried four Flood Maw, just a little too much of that card. Mako, you know, people, I've seen lists with Spyglass Siren, and usually that's in combination with Steamcore Scholar because it's a flying creature. But the Mako getting the counters matters so much for these crazy turns I'm talking about. You know, it's just, I described that curve earlier of playing FOMO, discarding VV, and playing Cauldron on three. If you had the Mako on turn one, that's without a land drop, five mana available to you on your turn three. Just by putting a counter on the FOMO, and then the Mako will already have a counter. You could play Winter Night Stories, discard another card before even using the mana from the Mako. I just think it's so good in this deck. And having a one drop also is just useful in any deck with profs, because you can just get value out of it on turn two. So then anyways, yeah, next two drops. Four profs, Eidetic Memory, four Cauldron, obviously really key parts of the deck. Four Fear Missing Out, kind of just the glue enabler, the Delirium thing. It's really powerful in this deck. With Prof's Eidetic Memory, having two combats means you can trigger it twice in the same turn. With Stolestone Sanctuary, that card has having Vigilance comes up. You maybe have seen that before from the Oculus deck in combination of Steamcore Scholar, but Vigilance is a combo with Fear Missing Out because you get extra combats out of your Vigilance creatures in addition to whatever you target. Two Glacial Rift Dragon Hunt, which is a number I see trending down in a lot of decks, and I've actually played four in the past, and I thought four was actually kind of fine. Kind of just a glue card. It's like a non-creature spell for VV. It lets you discard and do your thing. It has flashback, so when you're really going off, you can kind of always make sure your turn's absurdly powerful to the point that you basically won't lose. But I'm only playing two because the card I replaced two of them with is actually two Rona right now, Herald of Invasion, which is a card that will rotate.
Remind me what that is? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so it's the 2-mana 1/3 Legendary Wizard from March Machine, and it says whenever you cast a legendary spell, you untap Rona. And it taps to draw and then discard, and then you can pay 5 and Phyrexian Black to transform it. That's not really why I'm playing it, though it transforms into like a 5/5 trample that's annoying the damage. But, you know, it's just another looter. It kind of is like Fear Missing Out's numbers 5 and 6 to kind of set up these powerful turns. This deck has a lot of legends. Cauldron, Profs, Vivi, Tirsa all can untap your Rona to get multiple loots out of it. Multiple loots means more powerful Prof's turns, potentially. So, you know, it's a card that's vulnerable to removal. It can get cut down, but just sort of some glue. And the three drops, I've got four Winter Night Stories, four VV. I'd probably always play those numbers no matter what. Two Tirsa and two Thrill Seeker. Like I said, I've considered cutting a Thrill Seeker, maybe even four Tirsa. Tirsa's pretty powerful in this deck, but it's legendary and it's a three drop. I compared to Paolo's list, for example, my list is pretty close to the same, except that I cut like the third Thrill Seeker and the third Tirsa for two Ronas effectively, so kind of just lowering the curve.
Gotcha. Okay.
For the lands, pretty normal stuff, like, but just two Thundering Falls and two Soulstones. Soulstone's really, really good in this deck, in my opinion. I see numbers trending down. I think 20, you know, this is 22 lands, so I think 20 of my lands making colored mana is totally fine. One note, playing this deck with Soulstone Sanctuary, you can activate it a lot sooner than you think when you're going off the VV Cauldron thing. And I think I keep making this mistake where I identify on the turn that I'm doing VV Cauldron stuff that I should play Soulstone as my land for turn because it's very likely I can activate it then. But I actually think I've been missing windows to play it the turn before I do the Cauldron VV thing because I could be attacking with it on my next turn.
Gotcha. Yeah, you do produce a ton of mana once you have access to VV Cauldron.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, you can discard the VV on turn two with a creature and then on turn three play a Cauldron means you still have like a land untapped potentially here, and that land could have been a Soulstone you played on turn two.
Yeah.
And then it could be attacking on that turn. So, and it could be getting Prof's counters and be another VV activation too, things like that.
Mm-hmm. What have you settled on for the sideboard of this deck?
Yeah, so I'm still working on this, but I'll read what I have in front of me now. I have two Enable of Scream, two Fire Magic, two Lithomantic Barrage, one Negate, one Disdainful Stroke, two Fairy Mastermind, two Abrade, two Draconautics Engineer, and one Twin Moss Stormbrood. I think the Fire Magic Barrage thing, I've just played against Demir a couple times in a row recently. I think that's one too many of those cards. There's one mana red cards that can answer things. I'm probably going to cut one of them, maybe even Fire Magic. Though being an instant that kills the Mastermind matters.
Mm-hmm.
Still thinking about that. It's just a lot of interactions. You can see the Masterminds are for mirrors. The Draconautics Engineers are just the thing you kind of board in when you slow down and you expect your graveyard to maybe get hate a little bit more. And Thrill Seeker is not a card you need because, you know, Thrill Seeker is a really useful tool to have in the matchups, like I said, like probably even the Yuna deck, Jeskai Control, the more white control deck where you just really need some capability to completely like one shot your opponent from maybe just untapping with only a Cauldron, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not very it's pretty win more in matchups that don't have, you know, like Ultima or something like that, because you're just going to create such a powerful board state, your opponent's never going to come back from it.
Yeah. Is Ultima a card that you worry about in general? Like, is it a pretty good against you?
If they can stem the early game, then that, you know, answering a Cauldron could certainly be an important part of the equation there.
Yeah, like it wraths all your creatures and your Cauldron.
Yeah, exactly. This deck can certainly rebuild pretty well, but, you know, it's sort of... In those matchups, I think it's going to depend a lot if you draw like a Winter Night Stories. You'll notice this problem playing Prowess, that some matchups you really feel like you need to draw your first stock up and then you can start chaining all the good parts of your deck together. And that feels pretty true with Winter Night Stories in this deck too, but this deck doesn't have Sleight of Hand and Opt to make that a lot easier. You know, you're kind of just coin flipping most games if a Winter Night Stories is in your top 10 cards or whatever.
Yeah, you did say, I think you said it on the podcast, but you said you sometimes trim Cauldron pretty regularly in sideboard games.
Yeah, that's just because people have graveyard hate. And you know, I'd also keep in mind, like versus Dimir, I've been bringing in the Abrades just kind of over the Dragon Hunts because they're bringing in their own graveyard hate, their Ghost Vacuum. Sometimes some decks will randomly have their own Cauldrons against you because it's so powerful to take Vivi. And then in addition to that, Abrade being an instant matters a lot in that matchup, because if they flash in a guy end of turn, you can Abrade it still and they won't Kaito you, things like that.
Right. The few games I played with the deck, it definitely struck me as the kind of thing where I actually don't want to sideboard too much in each game.
It's mostly moving around your interaction. Like, I don't really like Into the Flood Maw versus Dimir, for example. I have slowly moved to just boarding out all of my Flood Maws in that matchup.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You switch around your interaction slots for the matchup, yeah, basically.
And I'll board out my Thrill Seekers, like I said, but I'm bringing in, you know, the Engineers. You know, a lot of these sideboarding with this deck is pretty one-to-one. Right now, I guess I'm missing sort of a value grindy card. You've seen Enduring Curiosity in that slot. That might return. A card I maybe would consider in that slot instead is actually just Rowl. Even though the kind of part of Rowl that says when you cast a non-creature spell, put a loyalty counter on it, might not be that great in this deck. It makes creatures, which matter for profs and Cauldron, and it has draw three, discard two tacked onto it, which, you know, is very synergistic with the deck.
That makes sense. I actually didn't understand. The list I copied had a Curiosity Cat, and I didn't understand it too much. I mean, obviously, it's a strong card, but...
Yeah. It's drawing, like, you're not really utilizing the flash very well with this deck, and
right. People
are boarding in any ghost vacuums they have against you, so they could just have, like, a go for the throat plus a ghost vacuum and answer it somewhat cleanly.
Yeah, that's a problem. I think maybe the idea is, like, well, you're boarding in some counterspells also, but, I mean, you don't want to board in a ton of counterspells because counterspells don't play super great with your strategy in general.
Yeah, I think counterspells are just kind of tough for this deck to play in general. I agree. I guess I'll use this to move into the Prowess deck, because I think there exists some territory that is between the Prowess deck and the Cauldron deck that might be good. And my current Prowess list, I won't say the whole list, but, you know, it has four VVs, one Cauldron, one Prof's Eidetic Memory, and four Planispheres, and a Wild Ride, stuff like that. And it's trying to emulate a lot of the stuff this Cauldron deck can do. But, you know, instead of trying to aggressively discard the VV, the idea is more so that you're just going to play a long game and eventually your VV is going to die. And having that one Cauldron can really lead to those really powerful turns again. And then in addition to that, Planisphere is another card that generates a large number of plus one counters, even potentially just equipping it to an Otter you just made off Rowl or Talent. And you can continue to have these really strong kind of one-shotty turns.
Yeah, and so this is the version of the deck that has all the cantrips and whatnot. So VV is more likely to kill them if they don't kill it. There definitely seems like a space here. I think at the moment, I played this deck a little bit, it seemed a little underpowered. Like, it seemed like the Cauldron deck had more punch to it. But it's definitely going to be something to keep an eye out as new sets come out and whatnot, and then as the format changes. I agree there's a pretty strong shell with, like, Storm Chaser's Talent and Stock Up and VV, and all the cantrips, which aren't rotating.
Yeah. Not a lot of that deck rotates. The biggest hit is probably, once again, Shivan Reef, which, you know, they gave us Starting Town, but that card's going to just feel like it sucks. I think if I had to build the Cauldron deck right now without Shivan Reef, I would probably only add two starting towns and like an island and a mountain, for example. You know, it is significantly worse.
Yeah, especially for a two color deck, it's just straight, pretty much just straight worse. Well, exactly straight worse, exactly. Yeah.
I've got one Twin Moth Stormbreed in the sideboard, I guess, I could cast every now and then.
So I, the way you've talked about it, I guess I heard Shocklands are coming. I guess Steam Vents is not.
It's not yet, yeah.
Okay. But, I mean, in theory, presumably, maybe in a later set, they will print those.
I would have to imagine so, yeah. And then these blue-red decks have the fortune of, you know, half the fast lands are rotating. The allied colored ones are rotating, but Spire Bluff Canal will not be rotating. But, you know, it's a bigger pit on some of these allied colored decks that aren't getting an allied shock. Fortunately, Gruul Delirium is getting Stomping Ground, but like Gruul Delirium is losing 8 lands out of its mana base and only getting 4.
Yeah. Was Blue White getting Hollowed Fountain?
No, they're not. Yeah.
Yeah. So they lose Seacrim Coast and
they're getting Watery Grave. At least.
Right.
So it's very weird to not.
Yeah.
I kind of wish it was just all allied ones given the kind of imbalance between the fast lands, half of them staying and half of them rotating.
Totally. So, to wrap up a bit, so Jacob recommends the Cauldron deck for this weekend. I mostly just co-sign that. Every time I play with or against that deck, it just seems really powerful. It seems good against the, like I said, I think the flavor of the week is like green decks in general, ramp and stuff. And I think the VV deck sounds pretty good into all that.
The Tifa deck is certainly a matchup where, you know, I've had these 4 Flood Moss Blitz sometimes in these decks, and that's a matchup where that can shine. They do have the protection spells, but you can kind of just reset a Chocobo or a Bristly Bill or a Hydra, and it can be pretty devastating for them.
Right.
They need land drops for those cards to work. They don't have a land engine that, you know, lets them keep playing lands.
Yeah, but do you have a 4th Flood Maw on the sideboard?
I could see having something like that. Unable to Scream's not very good against them because they get their counters on their guys.
Right. So maybe you want something like that. I could see it for sure. Yeah, I mean, even just being able to, like, maybe you start with a Wild Slash on their small guy and they pump it and then you bounce it later or or whatever. Yeah. I could see you solving that matchup with some cheap interaction. Because they don't have a lot of interaction themselves, you know.
I would guess the Prowess deck is much better against the Tifa deck than the Cauldron deck, weirdly, because it's a bit more interactive. But
right.
Maybe that's not even true. They're pretty similarly interactive. I guess it's just that it has the cantrip, so it finds interaction more reliably.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. So now that even though I've kind of co-signed that recommendation, I might still play a control deck myself. This weekend, it's one of those things where, like, I like control and I pilot it better than I do other things in general, and I haven't played that much of the Prowess deck, the VV deck. I might still play the VV deck, honestly. It seems really strong.
But
if you're starting from like an equal place, I think, yeah, you go there. I might just have so much experience with the control decks that I might play that, but I think on Patreon, so I'll have Jacob post his list on Patreon for sure. Yeah. I'm gonna post maybe an update to one of my control decks, and then I also, before we go, I'm gonna post this Naya Yuna deck I played because I got it into a kind of a cool spot, even though I don't recommend it necessarily. I found Bitter Reunion is a card that exists in Standard at the moment, and that fits well in the deck as a nice, because I had people have played Fear of Missing Out, but Fear of Missing Out doesn't work super well with that deck.
I agree. It's just like the 2/3 body is pretty useless a lot of the games.
Yeah. And Bitter Reunion gives you the same discard angle where you can discard a big enchantment or you can discard Esper Origins. And then it also like is pretty threatening when you can use it to haste up an Overlord or whatever, especially the red Overlord, which I have in Naya. So
that makes sense, which obviously you can't do when you reanimate it with Yuna, but this deck plays to eventually casting these types of cards. So
totally, yeah. And I've used it just to haste out once Esper Origins is on its third chapter. Yeah. Well, yeah, you flashback.
You can't get the trample to something with haste.
But you can't. No. So you just, but I have flashback Esper Origins to give that haste and get in, so it's, which is unfortunate because Bitter Reunion is rotating, I'm pretty sure.
It is.
Yeah, so we'll be posting those. Anything else you want to talk about with Standard?
I'll touch on the Tifa deck because I played it a bit.
Oh, right, the mono green. Yep.
Yeah, so I have some notes about it. It feels pretty powerful, but, you know, I have not found a solution to this problem yet, but playing this deck, Tifa has very clearly felt like the worst card in this deck. You know, each turn, even if you do something kind of powerful with the Tifa, if it's not lethal, it's like going to your next turn as a 1/2. And, you know, you play these Snakeskin Veils, sometimes Overprotect, sometimes Royal Treatment. Those are also cards that, like, yeah, protecting Mossborn Hydra is kind of nice, but it's kind of hard to do some games. And so I don't know if there's, like, I was trying a list that didn't have Tifas and stuff, and I was splashing white, and I had Felidar Retreat, which is, like, randomly in Standard, which is a 3 and a white enchantment with Landfall that says you choose one, make a 2/2 cat token, or put a +1/+ counter on each creature you control, and they gain Vigilance. I'm not sure that's quite the right angle, especially for main deck, maybe sideboard games. The other option to kind of fix my Tifa problem is, I don't know, a card like Audacity, I think would be pretty good, which will rotate, but this weekend, you know, you can still play it. It's kind of the Rancor-like card, but instead of when it goes to your graveyard, instead of it returning to your hand, you just draw a card. But that can kind of permanently give Tifa some power. So, you know, you could Rancor your Tifa and then play one of your fetch lands, or, you know, have the Chocobo plus a land, and that's a pretty serious boost to power. And also giving trample to Saz's Chocobo or Bristlybill can matter a lot because they're really large creatures eventually. So honestly, having tried the version without Tifa, if anything, what I might try is just more Audacities with Tifa. Because I do appreciate that the deck can win pretty fast and it's pretty aggressive. And being a mid-rangey deck that's basically mono green is not ideal because you're not going to have much interaction. Secondly, speaking of the white splash, this deck being mono green is kind of very weird to me.
Lazy, maybe? Just yeah, kind of a starting point, basically.
You can so easily splash a second color, and it's going to be so close to free. And I don't want to, like, use that too lightly. Like, you can just... I saw Fire Shoes even top 8 at a challenge where at least he just had, like, a Plains and some Elesh Norns in a sideboard for the mirror. And, like, you know, you can tutor this one basic land really easily. And then as far as your basic forest count goes, like, yeah, you want a lot because you need to be able to fetch up these basic forests. But I think 10 is, like, plenty. And you can fit in 4 dual lands and still 10 forests and your one Plains or whatever color you're splashing and your passages and escape tunnels. Maybe one Promising Vein can go in there. For those of you that don't know, that's the cave that enters on taps, taps for colorless, and has one tap sack, search for basic land, put in the play tap. So it's not as efficient at double triggering landfall, but eventually it does, and it enters untapped as you're kind of curving out in the early turns, and kind of lets you save a fetch for later.
Yeah, but, something... is if Verges are a card that you would want to play as your dual land, some of the Verges start with green.
Yes, the green, white, and green, black Verges start with green. So those, in my opinion, are absolutely free. They basically cost you nothing to include 4 of one of those in your deck and splash the color off just 4 of those and one basic. So, you know, you could be sideboarding Go for the Throat. You could be sideboarding Get Lost, Rest in Peace. I just think, you know, you don't need, even if it's only sideboard cards, you just don't need to lock yourself into being a mono green deck with crappy green sideboard cards. You really could expand yourself. This deck could play the black one, the black splash, and Mosswood Dreadknight, I was thinking about. Stuff like that.
Yeah, that sounds like a decent sideboard card.
Yeah, so just things like that. I really think you should be splashing a second color, even post-rotation. So it's kind of funny because those Verges are the opposite of the Shocklands the deck gets. So I'd probably, you know, pick one or the other. If you decide red or blue will be good cards to splash, give you good cards to splash, well, there's going to be Stomping Ground and Breeding Pool getting reprinted. So one way or the other, I think you'll just have a decent avenue to splash. I certainly would not play the Verges that go the wrong way in this deck, but...
Right, that makes sense.
The Verges that go the right way, or, you know, if this weekend is what you're looking at, then yeah, you can put Copperline Gorge or Botanical Sanctum in your deck and it's probably fine, or maybe you decide the Painline's better, or maybe you play 6 copies of these cards, you know. Like I said, 10 forests is plenty. It's probably like 8 or something is what you actually need, but 10 I would feel like it's just extremely unlikely you would ever be in a spot where you can't still fetch a forest out of your deck.
Yeah, makes sense. And it gives you the prerequisite untap green on turn 1.
Yeah, and then specifically with the Verges, too, you know, you need the basic forest to turn on the white or black part of your Verge.
So I had a thought about this deck when you said Tifa was the worst card. My initial thought was like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. It's a card that's bad when things aren't going great, like, you know, almost like a win more type of thing, whereas if your opponent's interacting with, interacting with you and whatnot, and you just need like some threat, just having a stupid Tifa is probably the worst case scenario. But then I also kind of thought, isn't that kind of the whole point of the deck, is to have like this crazy landfall cheap threat that can kill them, kind of like Hydra?
Yeah, I guess the only thing I'll say is that when things are kind of going okay for you, like the landfall payoffs that get +1/+1 counters are just maintaining their board presence from turn to turn, and they don't require like another spell to be good. Whereas Tifa kind of requires you to pump it with something and have like the Chocobo plus fetch land thing going on, or things like that. The traveling Chocobo plus fetch land thing. I know there's two
right. Chocobos in the deck. If an efficient way to give like +1/+1 counters or something came out, would that, you think that'd make Tifa more appealing to you?
Yeah, it would. And I'm not sure what other, there might even be options in current standard.
Yeah, we're just about to have a new set, so
yeah, or, you something know, to keep I said an you eye out sideboard for. Sideboard Felidar Retreat, that's not rotating, and you know that puts counters on her too. There's sort of an issue with that card, and you know, eventually you run out of cards in hand with this deck, and none of your landfall things work unless you top deck a land. So it's really awkward.
Right, you don't have any like card advantage, really.
Yeah.
Feels like it's a fine place to bring it up now. There's a card I know you were eyeing from the new set that might fix that sort of problem, right?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, we can move into this now. So I think that post-rotation, this landfall deck might be one of the best places to start. It's pretty aggressive. It's not really losing anything. And it seems like it's getting multiple new tools. And specifically, there's this card. It's spoiled in Japanese, so I'm reading the translation. It's called Ice Tail Explorer. It's 2GG for a 2/4 Insect Scout. It says, you may play an additional land on each of your turns. You may play land cards from your graveyard and landfall mill a card. So this is the type of card that, you know, you play this, you can immediately play a Fabled Passage or something from your graveyard again, and even if you'd already played one land this turn. So it's just going to really boost your landfall counts, and also, as long as it's in play, as long as you have drawn one of your Fabled Passage or Escape Tunnel or Promising Vein, you're always going to have an ability to keep generating a lot of landfall, but also it digs for those cards, and even if you didn't have one of those cards drawn yet, and you just played this, and you played a basic forest from your hand, you might mill another basic forest.
Yeah. This seems like the perfect four drop for this deck.
Yeah.
Provides some card advantage. If you've already drawn one of your fetch lands, you get four triggers on turn four right away with it. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, you know, if you slam your Mossborn Hydra, potentially even on turn two off of Llanowar Elf, and then I guess this won't work with Fabled Passage. So let's say turn three, Hydra. Turn four, you play Fabled Passage, you play this, and you get to play the Fabled Passage again. You know, that's 2, 4, 8, 16 on your Hydra right then. Like, pretty much lethal.
Pretty nice. Yeah. Or Tifa, but yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty nice. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so there's going to be lots of cool things to look out for. Over the next few episodes, we will be covering, obviously, the new cards. We'll be doing an episode talking about rotation, which cards are rotating. I've had someone request from me already that we talk about good decks to build for the new standard.
Definitely.
Maybe even with an eye on like building for paper, where which cards might stay good for a while, that sort of thing, like decks to buy into. So we might touch on something like that.
Yeah. As the full spoiler comes out, I think we'll have a much bigger picture.
Yeah, totally. And we'll be doing a top 10 episode again. I think that was pretty fun.
Yeah, I agree.
So yeah, thanks everyone for listening. That'll do it all for today's episode, and we'll see you next time. Okay, so there's a promo for the next Standard Showdown. It's a card that you may have heard of before. It's called Monstrous Rage. also known as a card that has been banned in Standard as the Standard promo. It looks pretty nice. It's got that old border on it.
Yeah, retro.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty... The sicko in me is pretty excited to get that card because I think it's going to be pretty funny. But I was a proponent that they shouldn't even ban Monstrous Rage before, or they didn't. They certainly didn't have to. And now that I know that their Standard Showdown promo was Monstrous Rage, I think they totally just should not have banned it. What do you think?
It's hard to have that influence it. I think it's fine to just not care about that when you're banning cards. The Monstrous Rage ban is really awkward because it certainly heavily influenced by content creators bringing up that card a lot.
It does. It does seem that way. It's sort of like a card that people don't like playing against, but
yeah,
and maybe that's the reason it was banned. Honestly,
yeah. I mean,
it's hard to make an argument to me that it's a power level reason. To be honest,
well, to some extent, I understand what you're saying, but the card seeing play in the Is It Prowess deck, I actually think is sort of a testament to its power level, because you know it demonstrated that it's not seeing play solely because of the Valiant mechanic or things like that. You know, mm-hmm.
I do agree that it's a really strong card. I mean, but, I don't think it's like a bad card.
It's not that fun because, yeah, playing blockers has sort of been a good thing. But, you know, like Tarmogoyf, I'm sure it would see play in standards, but it would not be as much of a trump. You know, people were playing a lot of cards with Death Touch because of Monstrous Rage's existence, basically. Preacher of the Schism, Glissa, Shieldred. Those cards, I think, effectively were really only seeing play because they could block and still 2-for-1 Monstrous Rage.
Yeah. Okay. Cecil. Okay.
Their point about Pioneer is not incorrect, at least. Mono Red is like the most played card in Pioneer, and I keep clicking on all these challenges. And even though the top most played cards in most formats are not a list of only Mono Red things, it seems like Monstrous Rage keeps making its way into the top 10 most played cards in any given tournament for Pioneer. Mm-hmm. I keep clicking on.
Sure, so. But this is their standard thing.
Of course.
I just think that standard as a format is like one of my favorite formats. And I think Magic was really healthy when standard was doing well, and they kind of let it die. And now they're sort of making this big push to bring it back, which I think they're doing a pretty good job. Like, they're making really good promos. They're giving stores lots of strong promos to hand out. And I know that I've been playing locally, and you know, I see the player that's more like, oh, I'm gonna play standard, sure, I'm gonna buy into it because of my friends are playing and I want to build this standard deck and this is cool, and then you get a prize from the tournament that you did well in, and they just give you this card that's not legal in standard as your promo, and it's kind of awkward in other formats. I think, like, if it had been like, if the promo was Corey Steelcutter, I'd be like, yeah, whatever, you have to ban it, it doesn't matter. I just thought, because this case in particular, where like Monstrous Rage, I really don't think, like, you could have banned other cards in the red deck, like maybe banned Screaming Nemesis or something.
The early rotation part of it makes sense to me.
Well, fair enough. We'll see what people think about it. I know, like I said, I'm excited to have this goofy Monstrous Rage promo. So.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll be able to make it to one of those showdowns, but, you know, I am very invested in standard post-rotation, so maybe.